Welcome to the Cricket Pod Blast with your hosts, Ross and Alex.
Topic number one then, Ross. Opening ball. Ravi Bapara comes down with swine flu tomorrow.
Okay.
Who's batting at number six for England against the West Indies, in your opinion?
In my opinion, James Taylor.
Really?
Straight off the bat. He's the England Lions captain. What's
doesn't score any runs, Ross.
He does, he's got an average of over 50.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's close to 50.
You've made that statistic
up. I haven't made that statistic up. I'll be on the statistic train now, and I'll come back with that statistic. Very close to 50, if not 50. He's got a terrific average.
Well, let me ask you this.
He's very short.
James Taylor is extraordinarily short, but we're not going to hold that against him. I just want to ask you about this, Ross. What's your feeling at the moment about the depth of batting options to the England team?
I am more positive about them than I think you're going to be.
Yes, probably.
I think Nick Compton is a good player, albeit not that young, but he's scoring a hatful of runs, albeit at Taunton, the batsman's paradise. But I think he's a very good player. I think we've got some players, if they have good seasons, they'll be away.
Well, that's fine, that's fair enough. I think what you've got to do is you've got to look at the guys that have been coming through the system, and England has been reliant on their system to provide good quality players for a while now.
Absolutely.
And it's got to the stage where even the Aussies are copying us.
Yeah.
Having said that, the Aussies designed it in the first place and brought it over. But nevertheless, so I thought what it might be interesting to do is to go back 5 years to the England under-19s team that was playing that year against Pakistani under-19s that summer, and have a look at the top six batting batsmen there and see what they've done and whether they've kicked on. And anyway, I had a look at it and it's come up with some pretty interesting points. Before we get into that, though, it's just worth mentioning that on the bowling front, they've definitely kicked on from the England under-19 year. It's really impressive. In that first test that was played between the two of them, and the test series between the two sides was drawn 1-1. The ODI series was won by Pakistan under-19s 3-1. There were two bowlers in the Pakistan lineup: Junaid Khan, he of course who didn't do so well this winter against the England, but he's been doing well in County in 2020.
Yeah.
And everybody's favourite criminal, Mohammed Amir.
Well, yes, I wondered when I thought you might get to him.
He was in that side too. So
he's kicked on very well cricketing wise.
Well, interesting.
So well morally.
No, not so well morally.
So some of our batsmen might have kicked on very well morally.
I have nothing to say about the morals of the six batsmen we're about to discuss. Bowling wise, on the England under-19 side that summer, Stuart Meeker, Steve Finn, Chris Wokes.
Very good. Well, they're all there or thereabouts, aren't they?
Absolutely. I think that's an indication to my mind that you can look at that team. And those players in that team are ready, or should be ready.
Yeah.
I think some people might argue, well, the England under-19 side 5 years ago, they're still very young. But unless bowlers kick on faster than batsmen, there's no real reason why the batsmen should be held back. So, who were the batsmen in that first test? Going down, and number one was Billy Godelman.
Well, I like Billy Godelman. He's a good batsman. He started quite brightly this season. He's quite an attacking batsman. And his fortune could change. He's changed counties once or twice.
He has. Billy Godelman scored 71 in that first game. He's got a first-class average, though, Ross, of 30.
Oh, it's not. Doesn't make pretty reading.
He's a tall left-hander. He's at Essex at the moment. Yeah. He scored 130 versus Gloucestershire on the 5th of April.
That's right, yeah.
Didn't do so well yesterday. I see against Northamptonshire that he scored 9, opening the batting for Essex.
Okay.
Anyway, moving on quickly, number two, a guy called Alex Wakeley. Do you know Alex Wakeley?
No, I know very little about Alex Wakeley.
Northants right-handed batsman, scored 112 in that game. Strangely about Alex Wakeley, his coach at the Bedford School was Derek Randall.
Derek Randall?
Yeah, but first-class average for Alex Wakeley is 28.
Ooh, that's not great so far.
Not knocking on the door.
How many years has he been in the mix as opening for Northampton?
I don't know how long he's been playing.
I think around then, yeah.
In at number three with a score of 122 that day was Adam Lyth. Now, that's probably the only one of the list that's a household name.
Yes, certainly in this household.
Household may be a little strong on reflection.
But to me, he's an excellent player, Adam Lyth. He was the first man to 1,000 runs last season.
Yeah.
And he had a very good season. I think he tailed off a little towards the end. And is he injured?
I'm not so sure that it was last season or 2010 where he hit 1,000 runs. I think he's been suffering since 2010.
Maybe.
He's at Yorkshire. His last time out, he got a duck this season. Yeah. His average, though, is a relatively healthy 36.
It's pretty good. I thought it might be a little higher. It's unfortunate.
In at number four, another centurion that day back in 2007, Ben Wright. 105 runs that day.
I have to say, I don't know who Ben Wright is.
Well, Ben Wright, Glamorgan player.
Okay.
Got a century last time out against Hampshire in that very close game.
Oh, excellent. Oh, wow.
But nevertheless, first-class average of 27.
Yep.
Moving on to number five, Tom Wesley. Only scored 7 that day. He's actually, in all fairness to Tom Wesley, also an off-spinner as well.
Yeah.
A middle-order batsman. He's not going to be pushing Andrew Strauss's place by any means.
Is Wesley Essex?
Yes, you're right, yeah. And his average is only 28. And coming in at number six, who was the keeper at that time, a chap called Ben Brown, scored a century in only his 7th first-class game. It's got an average of 33, still playing for Sussex.
Okay.
There's a lot of hope. But I think my point is, you look at the six of them and a few things jump out as a pack. First of all, you've got to say that none of them are in the frame for England at this present time.
Yep.
None of the England under-19 top six.
Lyth maybe has to, you know... He could be a couple of big centuries away, maybe.
Well, Lyth was getting close a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The other thing that really jumps out, I don't know, is 5 of the 6 of them are playing second division cricket.
Oh, I see.
And I just wonder whether that's a healthy situation if we're looking for future England players.
Yeah.
To score, for example, the century against Glamorgan, and whether we're going to find ourselves in a situation soon with England selection, rather like football, that if you're in the second division or the championship, if it's in football, realistically, unless you're Steve Bull, you're not going to get picked.
And who is our Steve Bull there? Well, we haven't even got a Steve Bull, perhaps.
I would say that the Steve Bull of that lot is Adam Lyth. Yeah. I say that because Yorkshire are not a second division team. They shouldn't be in the second division. No. They're far too strong
for the
second
division. They're one of the best clubs in the country.
And they've got to be going up. So I thought to myself, well, maybe they're just too young. Batsmen take longer to develop.
Is that true? Maybe that's true.
Well, I went back to the 2004 under-19 side, and this could lead two directions. Either this list is going to tell you that, yes, batsmen take a little longer to develop.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, what it could tell you is, in fact, just the crop in 2007 really weren't that good, because these are the top six in 2004 for the England under-19s. Alistair Cook.
Yes.
Joe Denley.
Yeah, not thereabouts.
Hildreth.
Not bad.
Ravi Bapara.
Very good.
Samit Patel.
Yes.
Steve Davies.
Well, that's strong, and they've all kicked on, haven't they?
In at 7, Luke Wright.
You're a big fan of Luke Wright. Big hitter.
Tell me about Luke Wright. What's he doing? Is he at IPL?
Luke Wright, I don't believe is he in the IPL now? Got a lot of headlines because he was in the Big Bash, which is the Australian 2020.
Of course, he did. Very quick century out there.
Yeah, of course, scored the quickest century that there's been in that competition. And he's on his day. He's a fantastic hitter. I saw him. I've seen him Bash runs. And it's a very dramatic style. I think he's a superb player when he gets his eye in. I think that led him to an IPL contract. I think, like Owen Morgan, he is on the bench.
Owen Morgan probably by now regretting his decision to go out there and just carry the drinks for everyone else.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Could have done with some time in county cricket to sort out his technique. I'm not a fan of players going over there. I think Peterson is an exception because he's not a player who's ever needed to practice.
Yes.
Owen Morgan is a player who needs to practice.
Well, you've touched on something quite interesting there, but they say that Peterson is an absolute master and workman at his technique. And although he looks like maybe not that sort of player, he's always the last one in the nets, that sort of thing.
He's like the secret class SWAT at school, who would always pretend to be cool, but they studied very late at night.
Yes, that's what he is.
He gives the impression of doing absolutely nothing, but really, he's working very hard.
He's working.
Look, I'm a major fan of Kevin Peterson.
Sure.
And I've just used the word look.
Yeah.
So why don't we move quickly on from Peterson to the word look?
Oh, I've just put a quick stat in, although however smooth that link was. We've got a first-class average for James Taylor of 49.08.
Well, That's interesting. That's not something I knew. Yeah. That is impressive.
Yeah, 1100s and 2350s.
And the majority of that will be built up over his time with Leicestershire.
Absolutely.
All right. Look, Ross. Look. A bugbear here at the Pod Blast.
It's a bugbear.
It's the introduction of something that I think was probably introduced by one of the weasel-eyed Australian captains of the 1990s. And that's the perennial habit of beginning sentences in response to questions about sport or cricket in particular with the word look. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of his, and I listen to the Switch Hit podcast, but George DeBell, if you're listening, stop saying look.
Does he gives it a lot of look?
A lot of look.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's possible it's a macho thing, because actually... Well, players are using it. They're using it as a way of answering questions in their own way, and they don't want to be caught out.
I mean, I saw someone win Man of the Match. I think it was Grant Flower at the Oval, and he was asked about 8 questions, and look came in at the start of everything. Almost like that's media training. It's a one-word media training. Just say look.
I think what they're doing is the equivalent of Winston Churchill, who, when he used to sit in an exam, if he didn't like the question or didn't know the answer, he'd just write his own question and answer it.
look
is the tool look. By which they just answer whatever question they decided to answer.
That is true, actually. Moment. You divert. A politician's been using it.
Yes, absolutely. It's coming in. Oh, listen to Nick Clegg and David Cameron. There looks all over the place. Anyway, I call myself out. I apologise. George DeBell, you've got nothing to apologise for.
It's just a gentle reminder.
Yeah,
I would like you, George DeBell, to tell me if there was something that I was doing that you didn't like.
And I don't want to focus on George DeBell in this podcast, because I'm a massive fan not only of the Switch Hit podcast and ESPN, but of ESPN Quick Info, which I think is great.
Terrific.
And the stats are great. And they are part of aspects of cricket which I love. So can we move on to an aspect of cricket that I don't love?
Okay, interesting.
And that is, it's Christopher Martin Jenkins. I'm going to come straight out with it. It's Christopher Martin Jenkins. I can't bear the man. He looks as if you poured water onto him, he would maybe sort of inflate into a big jolly farmer. But someone at some point has sucked all of the moisture out of him and vacuum packed him. And instead you have this little kernel of just malice.
If you put... 8 of Christopher Martin Jenkins in a bowl, could you make popcorn? Anger-based popcorn.
Christopher Martin Jenkins has risen to a status within Lords in particular, which I find genuinely awe-inspiring. awe-inspiring because he is a man for whom I can only imagine conversation is a bit like having a conversation with the Gobi Desert. I wonder if he's ever, in his arid. Entire life... done anything silly. So he's come out with his new book, A Cricketing Life. It's had some interesting reviews. The review in the Cricketer magazine, which I commend to everyone, I'm subscribing to it, and it really is fantastic. But Michael Billington, who's the Guardian's theatre critic, has written the review of A Cricketing Life and is a fan.
Yeah.
It's clearly a fan of CMJ as well.
Course.
But touches upon, delicately I think, in the last paragraph of his review, all of the things that make me dislike him. And he says, and I quote, "Though CMJ occasionally expresses his irritation at aspects of modern life, including the obsession with soccer and celebrity, money's influence on cricket, and even the intrusiveness of radio's expert summarisers, who can he have in mind? This is above all a charitable affirmative book that is clearly the work of that increasingly rare phenomenon, a genuinely good man." Oh, so I apologise to CMJ if you're a relative genuinely good man.
I thought he was going to say all-rounder. Really felt that coming.
Well, he is... So CMJ really expresses irritation of all the aspects of modern life that I think we all enjoy very much. Soccer, celebrity. I think money's made cricket infinitely better as a product. Test cricket as well. And expert summarisers... been pretty much the best development in cricket for the last 10 years.
If you're going to tell me that I can't listen to Phil Tufnell talk about...
Or Simon Hughes.
Simon Hughes is what we're really talking about. But Tuffers or Hughes waxing lyrical about, say, Michael Vaughan on the back foot, then what are you talking about, CMJ?
Simon Hughes.
Isn't CMJ one of the people... to blame. Well, CMJ is self-flagellating.
I don't know. I just don't like the man. Simon Hughes, on the other hand, along with Bumble, we're very fond of. Simon Hughes has got a great article in The Cricketer, which I commend to everybody, where he's looking at Peterson and Jai Wardner and comparing them and not really making a judgment call, but just really pulling out the reasons why we love them both, but why they're so different. And I don't want to read it all, but Simon Hughes is...
Don't read it all.
Simon Hughes is one of the good guys, isn't he?
He is one. He was one of life's natural nice guys. But some people say that CMJ is one of life's natural good guys.
Well, so they do.
In what sense do you think, as you quite rightly said, do you think he's been described as a good man? How do we know if CMJ is good? I don't think we know enough about him.
Yes, well, that's the problem. We don't know anything about him.
Does he give away precious little in the book, I imagine?
The anecdotes about the absolutely mundane.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, it's to be commended because, there's so many books out there which are just pouring out details you don't want to hear about. But, I'll move on from CMJ into a much happier topic if you want.
Has he ever farted? That's what I want to know.
I don't think he has. If he did, it would be powder. It would be dry, hot powder.
And what I'm worried about is we describe him as a good man, you start doing that, and then pretty soon you find out that he's got Vic Marks tied up in a cellar or something.
In a bag.
In a bag with Matt Ronsley.
Right, final topic, Ross.
Ooh.
Going across the Atlantic.
Yep.
You and I are both fans of baseball.
Yep.
We see no reason why any cricket fan wouldn't be a fan of baseball.
I'd be offended if they weren't.
And so this section is called Billy Baseball, where we talk to our American cousin, who isn't here. We're just going to talk to each other. And we're going to talk about something about baseball that touches on cricket. And this month, switch hitting.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Ross, maybe we can start with you just very quickly explaining to the listener, in baseball, what a switch hitter is.
Now, to my understanding, Alex, and you're far more of a pundit on baseball than I am, but you come in baseball, and if you see that it's to do with if the pitcher is left-handed, you might bat left-handed as well, whereas normally you'd be right-handed to give yourself a better angle.
Well, yeah, I mean, the bottom line with baseball is that you've got players who will bat in a game right-handed or left-handed, and they can't change it between balls.
No.
They normally don't even change it between games. They normally say, tonight I'm batting right-handed or tonight I'm batting left-handed.
And is that dependent on the pitcher?
It normally is. So you know in advance of the game whether they're going to open up with a right-hander like Roy Halladay. And then if you've got a guy who's pitching right-handed, you might want to bat left-handed because you can see the arc of the pitcher's arm coming round. If you're batting right-handed against a right-handed pitcher, you're looking over your shoulder and it's going to appear in your eye line relatively late on in the arc.
Oh, yeah.
Do you understand the point?
Yes. It's probably good to have quite fat baseball players, so you just can't see it till very late.
Can't see it at all. I think that's the fat hitter.
The fat hitter.
The point about switch hitting, which I find absolutely intriguing, is that the advantage of being able to see it come round the arc, it's considered to be more valuable than the advantage of batting with your natural hand.
Yes, yeah, that's interesting,
And they must have at some point considered that in detail, because I would imagine whether you see it with a foot to go or with half a foot to go, if you're a right-handed batsman, you'd rather bat right-handed, wouldn't you?
I think so. I think this comes down to cricket being, the technique is, I think, a little more studied. Whereas I'm sure that there's great technique for a baseball player. For young people growing up, the thing of, well, why don't you try it with the other hand might be more prevalent than in England, where they go, for God's sake, you're right-handed, bat right-handed, because you need as much practice as you can get.
This is a massive failure by cricket, though, because in fact, in my opinion, cricket is a much, much better place to have the switch hitter. And I'll tell you why. Bob Woolmer, in his book, which we like to call The Bible, but is otherwise known as Bob Woolmer's Art and Science of Cricket.
He's one of the good guys, Bob Woolmer, isn't he?
Bob Woolmer was one of the good guys, Ross. Doesn't have a section on switch hitting, which shows what a modern phenomenon it is, and we'll come on to Kevin Peterson in a moment.
Yeah.
But he talks about the fact that you coach right-handed bowlers to also bat right-handed, but of course the dominant hand is the lower hand in that situation.
Yeah.
And in fact, someone like James Anderson is properly coached because he's a right-handed bowler. His dominant hand is his right hand, and so he bats left-handed.
I see.
And that if you are right-handed, you should be batting in the stance of a left-hander. And it's nothing but poor coaching that is leading to the current situation where the bottom hand dominates.
Well, that must have been a misunderstanding quite early on in cricket. Is it just us that have been making the mistake?
I just wonder whether across the country they go, you know, what hand do you write with? You can bat in that stance. It's completely wrong.
So bottom hand used to be a bit of bottom hand. That's where your power comes from, right?
Yeah.
But we're saying that now it's more about technique, more about direction.
I don't see any reason why you can't have a generation of young cricketers who are going in and, between overs.
Changing.
Yeah, between balls might add another 2-3 hours to the game on any given day.
But you're advocating between overs, dependent on who comes on to bowl.
There's no point in having an argument like this unless you absolutely go for it. Actually, what I'm advocating is the ability to even change your grip, be that right or left-handed, in the act of the bowler bowling at any stage.
Yes.
So let's talk about the fuss with Kevin Peterson this winter. He's up there in Sri Lanka. What happens, Ross?
He changes grip.
For the switch hit.
For the switch hit. And he changed it 2 steps into the ball or too late or too early?
Well, he was changing it whilst Herath was still in his run-up.
Was it Dilshan?
All right, but he's still in his run-up.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's not doing it... I beg your pardon, actually. I've got that completely the wrong way around. He's changing it after the ball's released.
That's right.
What they said. And they said it would have been unfair if he changed it in the run-up. Absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
To my mind, what could be more interesting in cricket than somebody, the batsman having the freedom at any given moment... Yeah. To do whatever he likes in that respect, because where's the downside? It creates vulnerabilities for the bowlers, and so the bowler's always in with a chance because the batsman's on the move. And if you think that for batting your head has to be steady, and in fact quite the opposite, they're actually jumping from right to left hand or vice versa.
Yeah,
it's not unfair to the bowler at all, and it's perfectly fair to the batsman to try and do whatever he's going to do to score.
Yeah.
And why should we be limited to a small range of strokes when there are others out there that they could be using?
Should the bowler be able to bowl, should he have to declare whether he's going to bowl right or left-handed?
Well, that's another great one. Why not? I'd love to see that. I'd absolutely love to see it.
I bet they didn't have to declare in baseball, do they?
Yeah, why not try with 2020?
Yeah. It's that one great thing is it's an experimental ground, which we can put all these little ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got no time for 50 over cricket, but 2020 is this perfect microcosm where they could give it a go and see how it works.
So hopefully someone's going to be listening to this and he's going to take that on board from the World Cricket Authority.
And Kevin Peterson, we're with you.
We're with you, Kevin.
You're switch hitting.
But we think it's only the beginning.
Has made the world a brighter place.
Yes.
Anyway, that's all we've got time for on this episode of the Podblast. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you join us next time.
Next time, indeed.
For some of the regulars, some of the goods, the bad. We'll be chasing through Facebook after your friend Mr. Rawsley.
See what Rawsley's up to next
time. Hopefully we'll be talking about some England victories against the West Indies.